Hello everyone, Shed Owl Steve is back, and Lucas has a wee announcement before we get into today's episode.
Yeah, before we get into this fantastic, fantabulous, epic Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast, we have a giveaway. When we hit 100 subscribers, we will be giving away a one-of-a-kind, custom, bespoke, I might say couture, Face Downs t-shirt. That's right, you can be one of the Face Downs crew with a custom Face Downs t-shirt. And a Shadow Showdown Structure Deck Playmat. Ooh, pretty nice. To find out how to win, keep on listening. We'll tell you at the end of the episode.
And enjoy the listen.
Welcome to The Face Downs, your source for TCG news and all things Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm Lucas.
I'm Ruben.
And I'm Joe.
And I did not forget the intro. It's been 2 weeks, but I didn't forget it.
Never. Consistent.
Consistent,
yeah. Well, we're here. Welcome back. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. We took a week hiatus because, we felt like it, and we were not up to scratch last week, and we aim to not deliver subpar content for you listeners. Only the best.
We took a week hiatus because we got COVID.
Yep.
We had coronavirus.
Miss Cornova, she did get Lucas and I.
Wait, do they cancel you on YouTube for saying that? I'm pretty sure you get demonetized.
That's anyway. Why I say Cornova.
Cornova?
Not like we get money anyway.
Yeah, I just say Cornova. And what else? People say panorama instead of pandemic.
Yeah, I had COVID. That's what we had. So it was a rough one. Haven't been playing a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! I personally got really knocked out. Ruben didn't. So I guess he's the superior duelist in that way.
I lived.
Yeah, and we are no longer in person either. So we're back to the Discord server.
The flooding. The flooding did subside. We were able to get home.
Yeah,
just in time to catch COVID. You know, so happy. Which, unfortunately means we did not get to play in the large scale ish New Zealand tournament that happened over the past week.
Yep, the Pranky Boys winner case tournament that was held in the brand new Card Merchant Hamilton.
Woo!
Devastated that we couldn't go. Obviously, Wilson has been a long-standing community member.
And we never will. I mean, it's so far away. We're just never going to go.
But yeah, Wilson's been a long-standing community member, so it's really amazing to see his dream realized into holding a physical store in the Hamilton region. And I mean, this was a pretty interesting event. It was quite fun keeping up with it on the sidelines.
But before we get into any kind of meta stuff, Joe,
how you doing?
How have you been?
Yeah, pretty good. I also haven't really been playing a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Lately. I went down to Queenstown.
Perfect. Dead game.
Weekend.
Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
Anyway, I went down to Queenstown for a weekend my wife's birthday and stuff, so I sort of chilled, and it was kind of nice to like take a little bit of a break from Yu-Gi-Oh! Because we obviously had the free weekend, and that like was a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! In one weekend, and then I'm not feeling burnt out, but like maybe a little bit, like, so
just
I didn't want to like
without us.
Yeah, maybe but I just didn't want to force myself to play, so I kind of took a week off there and then just took another week off, but I'm going to get back into it this week, ready to go. So,
yeah, well, we have OTS championships this weekend.
Yeah.
And considering I haven't been able to play any competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! In a while, I'm just going to wing it on a good deck. And from the looks of it, it seems like the meta is very adventure-y. It's very combo-y, but not quite like the combos you were used to in the previous format where people were actually committing resources. It's a lot of very small engines kind of slammed together with the hopes that one of them will connect. You know, the classic, like, I'm going to combo for a bit, and when all that fails, I'll just activate the Fusion Destiny I drew, I think is kind of the format. And I guess maybe that's why we've all been maybe not super excited to play.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I think this current format is kind of showcasing everything that's wrong with all the engines at the moment. The fact that Helka Fibrax has like showed its ugly head again with Aurorodon combos. It's just
card,
so boring. Like I'm not into that engine as a whole. And it seems to be even like now the 10 years are becoming more of an engine, and like Sword Soul itself is like more of an engine within like a 10 year kind of like Hulk deck. And that was just boring to me.
Sword Soul cards anymore.
And that's exactly what happened in Japan. Everyone realized that the best part about Sword Soul Tenyu were the Tenyus. So
and like the extra deck monsters.
Yeah, there was like no reason to play these subpar Sword Soul cards when your entire engine could be summoned from hands and activate and grave and just dodge every form of field presence interaction.
Yeah. You know, so I'm not super thrilled by the format and how it's shaped up at the moment. I feel like when the Albaz structure deck comes out, it kind of just adds to the problem a little bit, because I feel Fusion just becomes a whole nother engine that gets slammed into decks. So I've decided this format, I'm just going to take it easy, kind of play a couple of anti-meta kind of style decks, and just go with that. So, yeah. But I guess we can go into the top cut from the tournament in Hamilton.
Yeah, so the Pranky Boys, the winner case tournament, I believe it was 56 players, if my memory serves me correctly. So 56 players, that equated to 6 rounds of Swiss and then a top cut of top 8. The top 8 consisted of, I believe we calculated, it was like 4 decks that involved Adventure as an engine. Fluanderies, I believe there was a Dragonlink in there somewhere.
Yep.
I think there's 2 more that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Pure Phantom Knights. Just 2.
Pure Phantom Knights. Oh, yeah, 2 pure Phantom Knights. So, all in all, what are your impressions on that, lineup, on the top cut?
Well,
half adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we're seeing 0 Sword Soul, and we're seeing no Tri Brigade either. They're making the top 8. So, going by our, meta tier list, we're sort of right in a way where we put Adventure really high, but we kind of maybe didn't show much respect to decks like Dragonlink or even Fluanderies now. I mean, we did mention at the time that when it gets its new card, it will become more of a threat.
Yeah.
And I think the reason we saw that deck do so well is because all of the Adventure decks and everything seem to just end on the combo of Scythe, and Fluanderies doesn't care about Scythe. And I believe that, in a way, is why that deck does so well. And not to mention, you can just put a Wind Barrier statue out and protect it. So, yeah.
Yes. So I think, based on the standings and obviously what we've seen, Flaunderies is really powerful as your kind of anti-meta deck. I believe you put it in a really good, as we were in our group chat, Joe. It is the most meta deck that is the most anti-meta. And I think that's where Flaunderies thrives. Its points of interaction are so different to what the other meta decks are currently presenting. Obviously, things like Prankids and Phantom Knights, they have very unique points of interaction, where Flaunderies can quite easily dodge a lot of interaction, as well as prevent it from being effectively touched. Impin is really powerful. As a floodgate monster, I think really that's what carries this deck forward. You said, partnered with the Winged Barrier statue, a card that everyone thought was gone because of Simorgh no longer existing, this deck can just search it. So it's not really it's not really that inaccessible. And then obviously when you start getting to your turn 2s and 3s, Mega Riser loops, Avian Omni negates, traps being able to book, and then your effectiveness of being able to essentially recur all your pieces from banished, banishing cards from grave. This deck's crazy.
Yeah. Not to mention, you get to play Dimension Shifter.
Yeah.
I think that's I think that's the key difference, is because Maxi is banned. Dimension Shifter is functionally as good as Maxi, and arguably better at in certain situations, but most decks can't play it. So if you can play essentially what is, a better Maxi, it literally stops opponents from playing, not just punishes them, I guess, for playing. That makes your deck just a little bit better. And Fluanderies certainly struggles at going second. So that's a pretty key aspect, I would say.
Not to mention that new quick play, the Advent Adventure, I believe they call it in the TCG.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's absolutely insane. The fact that people overlook that it searches the field spell as well, which can it can kind of set up and dodge another effect later on. But that it's just really good. I did kind of underestimated the card a little bit. I saw it doing okay in the OCG, but then when I got to use it and play with it myself, I've done a little bit of testing with it.
It does it all, yeah.
every time I draw that card, I'm like, yep, wait, I've got this.
But the fact you that know. you can use it like droplets as well, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
You normal a bird, resolve it like a Robina. You can resolve its effect, and then before, like, you know, finishing the effect, you can chain the quick play, banish it. Robina will resolve. You also get the field spell. You're just completely up in that exchange a lot of the time. And it gets a lot better when you open a hand that isn't particularly good. Like, if your opening hand has, like, just a Stree, then you normal the Stree, activate its effect. You use the quick play spell to get the bird you want. And then Stree's effect resolves, normaling the bird you just added.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy things you can do with it.
It makes Eaglin quick play spell this full combo. Previously it was like, oh, you have to have Robina to do it. And it Eaglin was...
any activatable bird plus quick play spell full combo.
Exactly. It's amazing. I think that the quick play spell does add so much.
Another card we've seen in other builds overseas, not in the one that won the event in Hamilton, was the Smaug Bird of Perfection as well. It was like another wave of support that the deck got that we didn't really think about. I think it's a really good card personally. Like, it sets up like another layer of chain blocking. It gives you access to the Smaug field spell, which is actually like a pretty decent card if you give it a read.
It's an 1800 beta, which we found out last add in testing is kind of relevant.
It's a and it's 2-1 with the field spell. The field spell gives everything 300 attack and defense, so it means that Impins and Risers can beat over Griffin Riders in defense mode,
which is a relevant stat line for sure. Yep. I mean, getting above 3,000 in general is huge because it means you can out Barons, you can out Crystal Wing. Well, yeah, Crystal Wing's an attack. It outs stuff like that is pretty relevant in the deck because once you grind through your initial birds, closing games can be really difficult.
And the Smaug stuff was really popular in Japan. Like, it was very much an OCG tech that's, I think, kind of starting to carry over here. We've seen a lot of cool includes of people including stuff like Smaug Repulsion, which is just simply discard a Wing Beast to basically giant Trunade your opponent, which is really powerful. Obviously, Elbors being the field spell, you can summon any Winged Beast monsters for one less tribute if you reveal a level 5 or higher Winged Beasts. It gives you the additional normal if you have a wind on board. I think that the engine's quite unique. My only concern with it is the confliction with Dimensional Shifter, because obviously you can't activate Perfection's effect under Shifter. You cannot pay cost. But I think in saying that, that's honestly kind of fine. Like, if
it's fine because you either have body. Shifter...
Yeah, you either have Shifter or you have the 1800 beta with a Searcher. So it's really effective. And speaking of efficacy, James Hamill actually took out the entire event with Fluanderese.
9-0.
So first after Swiss and undefeated, obviously, winning the entire event. So congratulations to James Hamill. I know this is a deck he's actually been practicing for quite a while. And I think, like we said, the quick play spell really shows its usefulness.
It's pretty cracked.
Yeah, and from the look of his build, it was very much like without taking anything away, it was a very generic kind of Fluanderese build. It was like it's made to just be streamlined. Ghost Ogre and Snow Rabbit was the only thing I maybe saw that was like obviously beneficial to him because it hit the adventure engine, and like there was four other adventure decks in that top eight, so it was a good meta call.
I mean, he's got three Ash, he's got a Crow in there for DPE and presumably other Adventure / Phantom Knight / you know, all kinds of meta hits.
Yeah.
I like it. I think there's like a good lineup of hand traps in general. I know, Ruben, you had issue with the fact that Ghost Ogre and DD Crow can't activate under D Shifter.
I mean, I personally, again, it's like it seems a touch counterintuitive, but I think all in all, like, you either draw Shifter, which time walks, or Ogre and Crow, which can definitely cripple.
There's kind of a feeling of just like, oh no, my Ogre doesn't resolve under D Shifter. I guess all I have is D Shifter, the single strongest individual Yu-Gi-Oh card ever printed for going first or second. Oh well. It's like, it doesn't matter. Who cares? You're winning. What the hell is any deck going to do like under D Shifter? Nothing. To be honest, he's lucky there was no Sword Soul, because that would have actually been a pretty good matchup for this deck.
The other thing that I always worry about playing Fluanderese is coming up against another Fluanderese deck, because
that's also true.
That mirror match is horrible. Like,
I believe you were three players.
It's rough. Yeah, because all of your interaction is bad.
And they all trigger each other.
They trigger each other. Yeah, that's a miserable.
It's a miserable mirror match. And like the normal summoning, I remember like Rawlins at Palmy OTS Championship were just
don't even worry about it.
Because it was like normal summon. Wait, what one goes now?
Yeah, you want to face like 9 adventure like Phantom Knight players in a row.
Yes,
like
yes.
That is the ideal for this deck because you are just designed to hose them with normal barrier statue pass. Like that's enough.
Yeah.
So everything else you do, the Dimension Shifter, the Ash Blossoms, the Riser, whatever, like
the Book of Moons. Yeah. You've got so much. And then side deck. I would say the side deck for James's list is pretty standard. Obviously Lancia probably being the best hand trap of the format. Like as probably the first auto include for any side deck. And then Cosmic for banishing based removal, Lightning Storm for destruction based removal, Dark Ruler opting to transition to more towards a kind of on-field negation as opposed to something like Evenly Matched just because of Lancia running around so much. And then finally Harpy's Featherstorm. I know Lucas has a particular umbrage with this card because it's a bit win more. I think I would agree with that sentiment. It is a touch win more, but I mean, if it hits, it hits. And when it hits really good.
Yeah, it's like a card that when you're already winning, you flip it and your opponent goes, yeah, next game, what was I supposed to do, right? Like, it enables a kind of feeling of just like, oh yeah, why did I even bother? Like, you had Harpy's Featherstorm the entire time. And obviously, like, there are hands where you can normal a bird, it gets veiled, and then you set Featherstorm and, like, hope that your opponent doesn't set up a board and kill you and you have enough to play through their stuff next turn and I never liked it for that reason. It felt much worse in those instances than a Floodgate, because a Floodgate just slows the game down for a long time, and that's why I always preferred it if I was going to side like a really reactive, just kind of like oops, flip a trap card, then I'd prefer something like Rivalry or something, just so that like my opponent actually can't play for a bit. But I think generally it's probably fine. Like, decks can break the Fluanderies board, so I guess Featherstorm just means you don't get broken as much.
Yeah,
not sure. I'd have to ask him how much it actually like came up.
Yeah, if you wanted to learn more about it, obviously there is a really great deck profile on the Your Move TCG YouTube channel with James detailing it. So definitely go check that out on the Your Move TCG YouTube page.
And then what else topped? It was
Second place was the Invoked DPE deck, which was piloted by Michael Dwan. I think that's kind of... there wasn't really much in terms of, like, surprise.
There we go. Adventure Pranks, Dragon Link, Adventure PK, Phantom Knights. A lot of the same, honestly. Adventure VW, shout-outs to Cody, the only person, I think, on that deck, or, you know, that I saw on the day. And then, Brave Eldritch DPE and another Phantom Knight, so... Yeah, you know, that's the meta.
Yeah.
It's a lot of P's and K's, and then a little bit of kitchen sink to go with that.
I think the reason we're seeing this massive shift towards PK has to do with Protoss's ban. I feel like since that card's gone, like PK has kind of been freed now, like to kind of thrive in this meta.
That's absolutely.
And I feel like that's also probably why we're not seeing Sword Soul anymore, because, I mean, from my experience playing against PK with Sword Soul, it was quite a rough matchup. Maybe I just wasn't very good on the day. But, like, without Protoss, it's kind of hard to do a lot if they just open the hand traps against you and then have their 25 extenders to play. So,
well, also, we talked about in a previous episode, you know, I whinged about how payoffs have gotten way too easy. And Adventure is just like the freest payoff. Literally just draw a card, you go +2 and get in the gate. There's no cost. Like, as long as your deck can facilitate it, you don't use normal summoned effects. Why would you play a deck that doesn't play Adventure unless it is abjectly anti-meta or broken? So Dragon Link makes sense. Thwanderies makes sense. Pure Phantom Knight to a degree does make sense as well, because there are some pretty good normal summons you can play in that deck. But for the most part, the medium of Adventure, just that mid power level, I get a negate, that'll do, is so good. And I mean, we're going to get to it, but, you know, looking at the YCS, I think the same exact sentiment is being shown there, that in any kind of long form tournament, if you're not playing some variant of Adventure, there is a legitimate question to be asked, like, why are you not playing a deck that uses Adventure? It's a little worrying, I guess. It's a little troubling.
It's also $500 for the engine. So.
It is also $500, and there's a good chance that a lot of people not playing it just don't want to buy it, which is fair, because it's pretty boring.
It's going to be around for a while as well. I mean,
well, I don't know about that.
I mean, a while, like, as in until at least May, like, you know, because
yeah,
yes,
or
that is
the next few months.
Yeah, the next few months.
I can't see a world in which this doesn't get the 3-2-1 treatment very quickly. Whether or not that's right or Enchantress, who knows? But I definitely foresee, like, Konami's going to have to start going, we really messed this one up. And they're going to keep doing it.
I mean,
looking at branded.
It's already at, that engine is already at 2-2 in the OCG. Yep. They already are down to 2 Enchantress, 2 right, and it's still topping.
My VW list ahead of the curve by already playing 2-2.
Yeah. So realistically, I think that adventure will be around. You will absolutely have to prepare to deal with it. And that's where things like Ogre, I think, are kind of starting to tick in. Obviously, Lancia's hit a lot of decks at this moment in time, and that's definitely one that can hit it as well.
What worries me, though, is that everyone's playing Ogre and Adventure still is topping everywhere. I don't think there's, like,
You just have to, like, draw Ogre.
I just think there's, like, nothing that actually deals with it. Because everything you put in to deal with Adventure is then not used on the deck that they're playing.
I think
that's the problem, right?
A lot of the problem comes with, you have your Ogre for the Avenge token. Now you're playing with 4 cards in your hand and the person...
Yeah, do you have Imperm for the Hound, dumbass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can still go into
Collector for the right,
It really feels like a have 2 hand traps or get bust. Owned kind of situation. And of course, Imperm Nib still does the job, but, you know, that's asking a lot of a deck to always open that combo. And, you know, then you only have 4 cards to work with on your own turn. So you have to be playing a deck like Prank Kids, perhaps, which I presume is playing some variants of those hand traps that can play with 1 card.
Mm.
That's kind of your only option. So, you know, for someone like me who likes to play decks like V-Dub, what am I to do? You know, I want to play. Yeah. But I can't forfeit that many main deck cards to just playing a crap ton of hand traps.
No one can. Realistically, it's, but that's the thing, is it's the one deck that can.
And Sky Striker. I like the 2, I'd say.
Yeah, but at that point, like, in particular the Sky Striker, you are cutting into your own count for, like, you're ticking too hard towards the meta, of which is very diverse. Obviously, we discussed those top 8 lists. Your really only, through factor was the adventure, and then probably Phantom Knight being the most represented. But even then, like, your through line is adventure or the inclusion of adventure engines. Mm. And I mean, this carries over to the YCS Las Vegas that has just concluded. This was taken out by 60 card Dungeons and Dragons, or, you know, kitchen sink as people are knowing it to be. This is a 60 card deck.
It was literally 60 card.
So this is basically, this is probably where Yu-Gi-Oh gets bad, where we just see 6 engines jammed into a deck and it functions and succeeds.
Yeah.
I've got a fallback plan for my fallback plan.
Yeah. Which then has a fallback plan. Yeah. Yeah.
It also helped that the pilot was just drawing, like, right plus E-Telly plus Fusion Destiny plus Called By plus Ghost Ogre, like, every game was, like, their opening hand, just like, I just drew everything.
I think I saw Fairy Tale Snow in that deck as well, and, like,
yeah, that was a
that
snow.
Could be another discussion point. Was that a mistake bringing that card back? Because
probably. I don't think it's a healthy card.
It doesn't seem healthy at all. Yeah,
it seems like a completely resource positive card that just uses dead cards in your graveyard, of which you can get about 20 in any conventional combo for free interaction every turn plus a body. I mean, that's who would ever argue otherwise? Kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Not to mention there's 2 generic ways to set it to grave, like Shooting Riser and Beatrice are both in the format. So
yeah, I feel like it's something that Konami can learn from, though. Like every ban list always talks about wanting to see some of these cards come back to see what happens. We might have seen what happens now when Snow comes back, and they might turn around and say, "Hey, yeah, we gave that a go. Let's ban it again."
Move on. I think the only issue with this one is they brought back Destrudo and Snow at the same time with a level 7 synchro that dumps Snow. It's like the perfect storm. But I agree that it's good they brought back 4 cards to 1 just to see what would happen. I think that's actually, like, a good thing to do.
Maybe the wrong cards, but yeah.
Yeah, so it was won by Paul Aronson. He was on 60-card Destiny Hero Link Punk Adventurer. What a cool deck. This is legitimately the culmination of every single engine that is basically prevalent in the meta. This, as described, obviously involved the Punk engine, which we've seen as including Xiamen Foxytune. This included the Rose engine, or Rose Dragon engine, which is Red Rose, Rux Rose, Basil Shoot. The Adventurer engine, a Halka Fibrax engine, with a lit dig spot one that linked it to Auroradon, which then gave you your Cupid Pitch engine. And then you also saw he was on the Hopia Squadron. Well? He had 10 years in there. Everything. There was every single engine you could possibly assume.
It's like Dark Warrior, where it's like, it doesn't really matter what combination of two cards you draw. It'll get you something. I mean, in that case, it was any two Warriors make us old. This time, it's any monster in a tuna makes Hulk, plus any, you know, generic Synchro or Adventure engine or Fusion Destiny is just a good card to draw.
He was on Illusion of Chaos and Souls for the draws.
Yeah, it's just like, full of crap.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, getting a Souls and a tuna on field represents, like, five negates.
God, where have I seen Souls and a tuna before?
Echoes of Eldritch Synchro, which again was another deck that I just think was unfun to play against. Extremely good and consistent, and literally didn't use its main deck for anything. Its main deck was like a waste of time. You just cared about the extra deck and not drawing the Garnets, which is essentially what this deck is, you know?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
A ton of Garnets with extenders.
You know, this is the first time in a long time where we're seeing a deck that literally doesn't have an archetype in its name, kind of thing. You can't say he was playing Sword Soul. You can't say he was playing like 10 years. You know, it is literally just a pile of engines. And
I will say that this deck is not as good as Eldritch Synchro. Like, we are talking about two very different formats. And I don't think this deck is like going to be the unbeatable best deck tier zero threat that Eldritch Synchro was. Just because it doesn't have as many generic extra deck fallbacks as that deck did. I certainly think it's really strong, but Eldritch Synchro obviously had Linkross, it had access to like the Marshall Metal stuff, Hyper Librarian would draw it seven cards, like it was a very different beast.
It also had the most broken spells and traps printed for the archetype as a recovery plan.
Yeah.
You just had pops, banishes, summons from deck, like the resource game that Eldritch provided to Synchro Eldritch was just as good as the Synchro part of that deck.
But now, like, the, you know, the boards that this kitchen sink deck, you know, when they don't draw adventure, are very DPE scythe focused, which is not, like, it's not unbeatable. You know, a single droplet can deal with it. That being said, you do have to draw droplet.
Yep, you do have to draw droplet.
And again, like, there are still so many cards left. Like, I don't have a super strong dislike of Dimension Shifter, but it is in this category of, like, did you draw the thing that stops it? No? Oh, well, you lose. Like, cool. Yeah. What a fun one. I drew a good hand that did stuff, but none of it mattered because you drew that card and my deck doesn't do anything.
Yep.
That's probably still the feel bad of the format.
Yeah.
None of it's as bad as Io. I don't think anyone should be saying like, oh, Io banned, now we have to deal with this. But it's similar.
I would disagree. Io literally turned off your interaction.
That's why I said it wasn't as good. None of this is as bad as Io because Io sticks around. You know, Scythe is only one time, and yes, that's usually enough to win the game.
And then a runner-up for the remote to YCS was, I believe his name was Aaron, and he was playing Adventure Prank Kids. So obviously another engine that did do quite well. Prank Kids, we thought would be a engine or a deck that could really effectively utilize the Adventurer adventurer part of it, and it definitely did. It got into the finals. So they each knocked out Sky Striker and Hanko Chow, who was on Fluanderese. So
based
again, really good showing for Fluanderese, making top four I believe it was 650 person event.
So a smaller remote dual YCS. This wasn't as big as the first ones.
Well, like this was unfortunately it was a substitution to the event that was to be held in person.
That's so sad.
But realistically, seeing Fluanderese at top four, seeing Sky Striker at top four, there is kind of a gap for something that isn't as engine focused as the winner was. Obviously, they won for a reason. Their deck has a lot of resilience.
Yep.
But yeah, it's really interesting seeing Sky Striker and Fluanderese at the top four. And then obviously your other notable top eight was Pack playing DDDs.
Oh yeah, baby. Now that, I gotta say for a second, that's some swag.
To be honest,
that's so cool.
And I mean, he's been playing this deck quite a bit. Obviously, yep. Once the Battle of Chaos support came out, it does add a lot for the deck.
Yeah, you get a fat downed magician. Yeah. You can summon on anything.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You get really incredible extension, recursion, searching ability, big bosses. So I think that DDD is definitely something to look out for in your local play areas. It's a deck that's very effective. I wouldn't be surprised if we maybe see some of it getting reprinted in Ghosts from the Past too, just because some of the pieces are a touch inaccessible. Obviously, things like, you know, Flame King Genghis being a tin super from like 3-4 years ago. Then I think, you know, obviously a lot of starter deck or structure deck stuff that was exclusive that hasn't been reprinted, cards that have been reprinted since like an OTS super or Dimension of Chaos.
Yeah.
But overall, this is a really interesting combo deck because it does nothing like what anything else is doing right now.
Now, I will say, I do think that Pack is an extremely good duelist.
Absolutely. And this is not a learner deck.
That probably carried this deck a lot. I think this deck is really average overall, because if you compare it to the best decks of the format, like Fluanderese or Prankids, they are rife with one card starters that DDD like technically has. But you're talking like one card plus the three others in your hand have to be playable, or else, you know, you're kind of screwed. You can't play that many hand traps, et cetera, et cetera. But Pack is an amazing duelist and will probably make every deck look tier one, no matter what he plays.
Yeah.
I want to give a quick shout out to Prank Kids as well for just being like the best thing you can do with your normal summon. Like, that's basically it, right?
And I think, you know, all these other decks are. Yeah. My tier 3 copium shout out would be for Drytron Megalith.
Yes, it did 16. Make top 16.
Still good, baby.
Which, I think it's still
card.
Good. Yeah,
50 card
DPE Scythe, I believe, was in there.
Yeah.
So it was like a 50 card Dagda Scythe Link Megalith spam deck.
The interesting part about it, though, is he was on triple Phantasme and triple Fafnir, the field spell.
He was on Phantasme, yeah.
Yeah, so like.
What do you think of that?
I mean, he's gonna. I'm gonna wait for his profile to come out and have a wee look at it, because there surely must be a reasoning for it. Like, it must be.
Fafnir is good against hands. Some decks, like the Floodgate effect, because it reduces levels, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's good against synchro, and it's good against like
really good against PK, because that turns down their levels.
So that actually is relevant. So maybe that's why they were just like more in on the field spell, because the Floodgate effect is pretty good.
Way it gives you 6 copies of Nova as well going into it with a 50 card deck, which is not like a bad idea.
It's like 6 copies of Nova or 4 copies of your ritual spell. Like very much in the flexible spot of being able to find the cards you're missing. I think this is a really strong engine. I mean, I've always liked the Megalith stuff in Drytron. The synergy is so there.
Phantasme.
I really very interested in, obviously, I think this deck succeeding is a result of Droll not being as popular. And this is something we've definitely seen popping up in deck profiles, is that Droll isn't really showing up at this moment in time. It could, it absolutely could. But I just personally don't think it is as powerful as it could be. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, how are you feeling? Like, what are our hand trap analysis for something after seeing this card merchant or the Winner Case event, the YCS? Like, are we feeling like any hand traps on the rise or on the out?
On the out, I've not seen many imperms as much. I think, like, if you play imperm, you have to play nib or vice versa. I feel like Ghost Urgo is on the up. Obviously, it didn't see any play in the last few like formats or anything. Lancia, definitely the best hand trap in this. I haven't seen many main in it at the moment, but like definitely the best side deck hand trap. I actually feel like Droll still has its place, just for like problem decks that like are around.
I think the only hand traps that are viable are Floodgate hand traps still. I mean, we've been dealing with this problem for a while.
And Token Collector as well,
We traded out Droll for Lancia, but essentially what you're saying is that like hand traps that go 1-for-1 are just not really viable anymore. Like, going 1-for-1 against the kitchen sink deck is not going to do it. And
interestingly, though, I feel like Ash is still hanging around, and I think that's just because of how it just hits so many things, and like the pops and stuff.
It's just a main deck placeholder.
Yeah,
like you put it in the main deck because it's gonna do everything you want, and then you take it out like as fast as you can against most matchups.
Yeah,
I do think Token Collector is seeming underrepresented, and it's bizarre because if you look at the top cut of a lot of these tournaments, it's mostly adventure, and if it's not adventure, it's often Auroradon combos and things that Token Collector is like ostensibly really, really good against. So I'm surprised to not see that just everywhere, like even in main decks at this point, because again, it feels like a main deck Ash, while it's still good, is almost a liability against like the best decks of the format, and therefore having something that is higher impact but maybe like, you know, less applicable to most matchups is worth it, because your main deck is often decent at going second. The adventure stuff is really good at going second. Like the Kitchen Sink Tenyi deck is pretty good at going second. It plays a lot of like board breaking cards. Vashuta's still a crazy card.
Yep.
And I don't know. I have a lot of main deck Lancer and Droll been popping around, and I'm kind of pilled on it. Like, if you're not playing that, then it seems kind of weird to just play like a couple ogres here and there. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think the only thing I'd say that like say Token Collector doesn't do compared to like a Lancer or a Droll is it just doesn't do anything versus too many decks. Not saying like, I know all the top decks will get hit by it, but like if you come up against Floanderese and you draw that, it's gonna be, you know, you're gonna then be playing with four cards against the Floanderese board rather than you know your full hand. Whereas if you draw a Lancia, that's going to be good against not only the Lancia adventure, but the everything deck. Else. But yeah,
Lancia is really powerful right now.
I think a Token Collector will always kind of stay in the side, and unless we get like some kind of weird tier zero format.
I mean, if tokens. That tier zero format doesn't include a single token, then it's obviously on the out. However, seeing Auroradon pop back up, seeing the adventurer tokens run around, it's not really a... I definitely think that Token Collector's place will continue to remain. I don't really see a necessity for it to be out at the moment. Potentially not of the highest caliber as it was previously. Obviously, the diminishing success of Sword Soul definitely warrants it to not be as prevalent. I mean, even just in that, like, we're seeing a lot of in this top 16 list, he was on one because it's a really good Beatrice target. That's obviously quite a common interaction for any deck that can put sixes together. And I think that Token Collector is a really good Floodgate hand trap. Also insulates your plays from Nibiru because they can't summon a token. And I think that that's where it'll probably lie. It'll continue to see application until token-based strategies go away. And I don't really think that's going to be for a while, especially with kind of the product release schedule on the horizon. I think, if anything, Adventure is going to be more popular once the branded decks come out. Not to mention that a lot of the decks can play around stuff like Droll. Like, you can brand it opening and draw step so that you don't get Drolled. And then it means that your first hit would be, like, a Water Enchantress, which isn't a hit. Like, that's fine. So I think that it'll be an interesting scenario for stuff like Droll and Lancia. I definitely see Lancia being a mainstay, though. Like, I feel like it's really putting in its work.
It'll be good against Branded, too.
Yeah, because it just turns off Albion.
Yep. And the other one, because it has to... Oh, the other one has to shuffle back from...
Lubellian shuffles from Banished
to Grave. Resources. Look, if there's any evidence that the game is going to get worse, it's that there's no doubt that Branded is going to be everywhere. And it's just going to layer on top of this stuff in the most disgusting and just horrible way. I can't say
it could
say
be
I'm
in for a rough few months, yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Which is odd because it's like a new product should always be exciting. And I think there's like this dread right now about product coming out of just like, well, here comes this. Like, DPE felt that way. Dragoon felt that way. You know, we felt a kind of way about Cross Out, but also Adventure has totally lived up to its hype. Branded is totally going to live up to its hype, and there's this impending dread of like, can we just get like decks, please? Can we just we just get like a cool new deck? That's the new deck that we're excited about. Yeah. Mill.
DPE is definitely something that we said that was going to be huge, and it definitely has been, and like that's something that will have to be
in spades.
It's going to be have to be addressed. Come Boundless time. Yeah. It's too good.
Like, I guess the question, like, where are we expecting or wanting Yu-Gi-Oh! To go? Like, what is the deck that you would hold up as, like, this is really awesome deck design. I want every deck to play like this. Like, when was the last time you felt like a deck really captured your attention that way?
I mean, DDDs. Like, that's the perfect example of, like, a deck right now.
That's a great one.
And I mean, and Fluwanda. Like, Fluwanda are a deck that are an insular engine.
It's a little degenerate.
It's a little bit, but that's the caveat to it. Like, yeah, it has to have something that's unfair about it. Otherwise, it doesn't succeed. And this is exactly where Sword Soul has fallen off, is it lost its unfair toll.
I think DDD is, like, probably the best answer, because you're right. It doesn't do anything particularly degenerate. It's just, like, a really good deck that's cool. That's it. Like, that, no one's going to be mad about
it. It's DDD. A unique strategy. It utilizes every summoning mechanic, which is very interesting. And its payoffs are interactions at ways that aren't common practice. Taking control of monsters or taking them as Xyz material is quite unique. Negating effects on field using Siegfried is really unique as well. So I think that there's definitely room for something like a DDD style to continue, because it is the most insular of its, like, of an archetype with the coolest play style.
I mean, I think, like, the Valiant deck looks like a really cool deck, you know, from Tactical Masters. And that's, like, what I want things to look like, is you read the cards and you go, that's such a cool way of interacting with the board. I can't wait to, like, introduce that into the format. But
I think we've taken a bit of a back step from last year's Yu-Gi-Oh!, where, like, at the start of last year, we had, like, kind of a cool amount of decks, but none of them were, like, particularly super unfair, if that makes sense. They were, like, you know,
part of last year, like, it was like the full power.
I'm thinking more of, like, when we had the freebie free, like, that format was like a lot of Dragon Link. I have to admit that was bad, but, like, there was Invoke DP, Invoke Shadow.
No, that was Tri-Zoo. I'm actually.
And then there was Tri-Zoo.
Clear your throat there.
Yeah.
It was Tri-Zoo. I don't know about that.
I'm going to have to admit right now as well, to everyone listening, I tried to spend the whole entire year not saying the word Shadol. and last podcast, no one picked it up, but, like, a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about the multi-format, and I let slip that I played against a Shadol deck. So, Steve's back.
It was hard. I mean, literally, multi-format duelist Steve's alliance. Steve's back, baby! Woo!
But yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's an interesting time, because it feels like a lot of decks are losing their, like, their unfun button, but at the same time, they're releasing so many decks with unfun engines.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, you know, you harken back to that last 3v3 event, like, okay, it was really good. There was Tri-Zoo, which was ridiculous. You had Prank Kids at essentially full power, which was 3 Meow Meow and anything that they basically
which
wanted.
Which was an objectively cool deck and would be cool, like that deck was insular and
you're like
fun.
Combo Dino, which Dina was on, but also, like, regular Dinosaur was still quite good. Obviously, lots of Dragon Link running around, because it was still Triple Striker Dragon.
And invoked Shadol Dogmatica.
The deck that just never gets hit.
That deck always sucked. For reference, that deck is, like, the same problem as every one of these.
I mean, I did very. Very well in that that tournament, purely because I was on main deck triple Droll and triple Phantasme.
You weren't playing the DS7. You, like, weren't playing the Dogmatica part.
I wasn't
playing
Dogmatica,
the cooler version of the deck.
Yeah, you're only just invoked Shadol, which I think is we're losing a lot of the uniqueness and a diversity in deck construction, because realistically, like we've said, the top 8 of the Hamilton event, 4 of them were including Adventure. The top 16 of the YCS, see if I can find the tweet, live editing. I mean, the finals were played out by 2 decks that included Adventure.
Yeah, they were both playing Adventure.
So there's just no room for like a unique design.
Think as well, a lot of decks crumble to the Adventure stuff. Like, Utopia is a really good deck that's cool to play, but it just can't, like, it can't beat after using 2 hand traps a negate. Like, it's not that kind of deck. And I think that's holding some of the more interesting, like, I think Utopia is a contender this format. I think DDD is very much a contender. I still think, like, B Trooper could have some legs.
DPBs.
If this stuff wasn't so backbreaking to play through after you resolve some, you know, effects.
I think we've spoken about it quite a lot during multiple podcasts where, and I think one of the times we even talked about Dragoon when that was a problem, being a boss monster that you just fell back on. And like what Yu-Gi-Oh! Has become this format is like, you go for, like, you almost tick off the engines as you play. You're like, okay, well, I used this engine, didn't work, that gets to cross, I guess I'll move on to this engine now, like, during the game. And it becomes like you're just playing, like, good cards with an alongside an archetype, or as we saw in the YCS, you're just playing good cards.
Six engines. So for reference, I just did the look at the top 16. 9 out of 16 players were on Adventure. So that's, again, over half.
And how many of those are on Flanderies?
One. One DD, one Fluonda, one Striker. Two Drytron, one Striker, one, two, three Prank Kids, and then Destiny Hero Link Punk Adventure. There was like a 10-year Sword Soul. Oh, there's three Drytron.
Yeah,
like,
so...
And it's every deck that isn't using Adventure. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 decks included DPE. So
amazing. Yeah. And honestly, that's a YCS moment.
Like, yeah.
I do think there is a difference between the winner case tournament that happened here and the YCS. And that is that, like, at a YCS, your ability to... You're going to play a lot worse players on average in Swiss. Because there's more people there. And as much as your deck needs to be high roll to beat like average decks, you just need a DPE. Whereas I feel like in an event like ours, pretty much everyone you face for the most part is going to be good or great. And therefore, like, the adventure decks that are like playing slightly more resolute packages seem to do better. But certainly, like, yeah, like, I think Striker summoning a DPE and setting Widow Anchor like probably beats your first 3-round opponents in YCS. Like, let's be real. Unless you're just unfairly paired up against like 3 pros in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe also, for reference, Pac went X1 after Swiss, only losing to Gadget, Gadget Brave.
Gadgets.
I'm pretty sure Gadget was in reference to Cyber's Gadget.
To how?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think. To like the Verte, Brave, etc. That whole hullabaloo.
Another engine.
So another engine. You're absolutely correct. Another engine. So realistically, I think as a kind of a summary, format's pretty adventure. Like we said, adventure is out there, and it is out there. This is definitely a format where, you know, unfortunately, money is definitely speaking right now, which is really a shame to say. Because
when the $500 engine sets up a board that only the $150 a copy card can beat, that's a bad feeling.
Or your $10 D shifter.
Well, guess what? Flanderies cannot play either of those cards. So yeah. guess that's your budget.
But but you'd know you play 450 for Pile of Extra Over Prosperities.
Yeah, you'll be playing for Prosperities and Mega Rises.
Although. Yeah. To be fair, like, the deck can function quite well with Extravagance.
That's fair.
I've seen lists that have top with Extravagance.
Yeah, $50 card.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. Just another budget inclusion.
Yeah.
Realistically, unfortunately, money is definitely speaking this format. The engine that is the most expensive is seeing the most success. And I think that that's kind of, unfortunately, where this is going to go until, like, May or April when we get the structure deck.
Yeah, now that you say that, that actually... fucking sucks. That sucks real bad.
Yeah,
because it felt like every format up until the last couple of years there's been like a cheap deck or a deck you just didn't have to spend dumb money to play, and it hasn't felt that way in a while.
Not really even hasn't. Like, you can buy 3 of those structures when it comes out and play well. It's you grab 3 structures to get the free brand of fusion.
Was Megalith Drytron playing Prosperities?
No.
Okay, that's your budget deck.
Yeah.
Megaliths are cheap, Drytrons are cheap.
Diviners are still 300 a set, unfortunately.
That's fair.
Maybe 200.
Because no one's playing Lightning Overdrive.
Play Manju, you know, just as good.
Yeah, play Manju. It's a fairy.
Who needs the level 6s?
Yeah, you don't need any of those. So unfortunately, this is probably going to be the way until April, unless they really feel like doing an emergency ban list, which would be cool, but they won't. Yeah. Realistically as well, like, we don't have to do it, we're not doing a painful choice, but does anyone have a first impressions on what do you think will get hit?
Scythe, Rite, Enchantress, DPE, Verte, probably Deskbot, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I'm probably on the same vein. Yeah, hit Hulk, but probably hit around it as always.
They'll probably hit Deathspot. Let's be real. If they get rid of Deathspot, Hulk's like 50% worse. What are you doing with a Hulk?
Nothing. You're just going to Nexus code.
Making Shooting Riser.
You're just getting a guy. Like, I understand that it's still a good card, but like, Deathspot is absolutely the problem. Like, 100,000% that card is stupid. It's not once per turn. We should have banned these. Not once per turn cards.
They did. They hit Steam the Cloak. That card's not once per turn.
Yeah, I know.
But no. They instead, no, it's fine. Yeah, I think realistically, Scythe's probably on the chopping block. I think everyone wanted it gone last time. And I just don't think it was as popular for Konami to, like, have their eye on it.
Yeah.
In the way that Imperial Order was, and Protoss was, and Simorgliink was. I think that there's definitely room for it to go. I mean, once again, Dual Overload providing the coolest cards into the format, being Dagda. Virto, Hulk of Ibrax.
Banned that whole set.
Yeah, there's just so many.
Nothing
so many
would be lost.
Cards.
Nothing would be lost if they banned everything from that set.
No.
Abyss King Gilgamesh.
Let him go. I'll let him go. I don't think, like, that card's also bad and broken. They shouldn't have printed him either. It's like, they're all, like, these really poorly designed cards that do too much. That's the total definition.
Mm. My concern with this format is, like, we're only a little bit in. And we're already talking about a ban list. So, like, that's already a sign of, like, an average format where you just want the format to end already.
It's a sign of a repetitive format. And let me tell you, Rite of Aramecia is the most boring Yu-Gi-Oh card ever printed. It has already beaten Alistar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least Alistar can make, like, a few different guys. You could make Kalaga. That's kind of funny. I made Raijin a lot. I thought Raijin was good.
Purgatrio for the win.
Like, that's cool. What do you do with Rite of Aramecia? The same thing every time. Literally, there's no variance. There's nothing. There's nothing. It's so boring. I hate activating it. I love
Illegal Knight and Dimension Force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deck gets better.
I'm at the point where I've looked at Despia and I'm like, I was so hyped for this, but now it's just going to become like an engine. And it's
become
sad.
The evil you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'll definitely be a way you can play it that isn't an engine.
Oh, Bad Joe would be like, I hate Shadow. Yeah.
Evil Steve. Evil like, Steve. Fusion summoning is for morons.
Yeah. Evil Steve says, I only exceed summon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, yeah. But so
that's it.
We're glad
Game
to be
sucks,
back.
We quit.
but yeah, so thank you so much to everyone for listening to our final episode. Yeah. Until there is a new ban list. Obviously.
Glad you all waited 2 weeks to hear us break up.
Yeah. We are indeed Spice Girling this group. No, we're not. I mean, we're obviously happy to be back, and we look forward to discussing more interesting, like, you know, more interesting discussion points during the upcoming weeks. We obviously, also, there's a lot to talk about.
Bit of a side note here, but I'd like to thank everyone for engaging in that poll that I put up a couple of weeks ago around the different formats and stuff.
Best formats?
But like, I feel like I know.
Do you have a winner?
The winner was Toss, I believe. And then it was followed by Goat, and then it was Dauntless Alliance. So, like, they were the top three, which is pretty much what we all kind of thought would be. But, like, I just wanted to see, you know, what the, general Yu-Gi-Oh population for.
Not surprised Toss won, because I think a lot of new players are in our page. So, like, that's what people remember. I would love to give a personal shout out to everyone for having bad taste for not voting for Plant Synchro, the actual best format of Yu-Gi-Oh of all time. It's fine.
What one did I vote for? I can't remember.
X-Saber format? Maybe? No, I can't
remember. Did I vote for... Maybe it was Dark... Maybe it was 2012. I think I voted for 2012, like Dark World Wind Up.
Yes. I'll vote for Plant Synchro all day. Everyone should try that exact mirror match out. I think it's the best mirror match in Yu-Gi-Oh's history. Legitimately the most fun you can have playing Yu-Gi-Oh! But a close second would be Edison. I think that's like a pretty good mid-range interactive format, you know, when Yu-Gi-Oh! Was good. Unlike now.
God, you sound like a Yu-Gi boomer.
I am a Yu-Gi boomer.
What are these arrows on my board? Yeah, why are there zones above my
monster
zone?
These arrows, they point towards my disappointment.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do with these pieces of space on my board? But all in all, you know, we're happy to be back. Can't wait to do more event coverage, more card analysis, breaking news. Get all your Crystal Beast stuff ready. There's a new structure deck for that just being announced today. So get Crystal Beasts.
Giveaway.
Yeah. And so we've got a super exciting announcement as well.
Yeah, and we'll actually probably do something so we can put it at the start as well, because no one's going to listen this far. But for those of you who heard the start of this episode, we do have a giveaway. And Ruben, you want to take us through how you can win those awesome prizes that we described?
And
can describe again.
So for the one lucky person, we will be giving them a one of a kind at this moment in time, Face Downs t-shirt to your size, and a elusive Shadow Showdown structure deck game mat.
This one's from Steve. This is a
Steve submission. So we have these available. So we'll be doing this giveaway once we hit 100 subscribers on YouTube. At the time of the beginning of this recording, we were on 90.
Thank you very much.
So thank you so much to all 90 people who have subscribed to us on YouTube. We are 10 away. To enter the giveaway, this will be for our New Zealand-based listeners at this moment in time. We are not made of money and cannot ship things internationally. But for our New Zealand-based listeners, we just want to know your favorite fusion-based archetype from Duelist Alliance.
Yeah, I know there's heaps you can choose
there's
from.
There's so many you can choose from. But if you want to just leave a comment on your favorite fusion archetype from Duelist Alliance, and we will be randomly selecting one winner.
Specifically comment on the YouTube video.
On our YouTube video.
You have to be on YouTube. Uploaded. And you have to be subscribed, and we will check.
Yeah. And we will obviously... Yes, John?
Yeah, once we hit the 100, we'll do it as a random dice roll for a random selector live on Facebook, and we will draw it live.
All
right. Yeah. Thank you. Please subscribe. Share with a friend.
If you want to win.
Yeah, if you would like to win this elusive prize package, please subscribe and let us know your favorite fusion archetype from Duelist Alliance. And thank you so much to everyone who has listened. If you are listening to us along on YouTube, feel free to like, comment, and subscribe. It helps out a lot. If you're listening on your favorite podcasting app, drop us a review. That helps a lot too. And if you have any questions, queries, comments, or concerns, you can email us at thefacedowns@gmail.com. We look forward to any and all emails, and hopefully can read some out on air next time. You can follow us on Twitter at the links that are listed below in the description. And be sure to enter the giveaway, and we'll be looking forward to drawing the name of that lucky person. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Ruben.
I'm Lucas.
And I'm Joe.
And you've been listening to
The Face Downs.
I've missed this.
Missed the out of sync.